Hello, and welcome to episode 85 of the Rocky Mountain Mason. My name is Ben Williams, your host. Today, I'm going to read to you an article from issue 1 of the Esoteric Mason, called Pasquale, Très Puissant Maître by Nigel Jackson, a history of Jacques de Livron, Joachim de la Tour de la Casa Martinez de Pasquale, and his Ordre de Chevalier Maçon et Luc Gouin, The Universe. Pasquale, as he is simply known to us today, was an important influence in high-grade Freemasonry. Operative in the latter half of the 18th century, Martinez de Pasquale and his amanuensis Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin and Jean-Baptiste Willemoes were primarily influential in establishing some of the most well-known and well-regarded high-degree systems of Freemasonry, including the Chevalier Bienfaisant de la Cité Sainte, and in some respects, other high rites and theurgical operations. This article was written by Nigel Jackson, to whom I am indebted for the research presented herein. Of course, Martinez de Pasquale and Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin would be the eponyms by which a peculiar form of Christian mysticism, which is not strictly speaking Masonic but connected with the Masons, Martinism, would arise. Of course, ironically, what is now promulgated as Martinism today was not really practiced by either of them. Martinez de Pasquale, Très Puissant Maître by Nigel Jackson. I am only a feeble instrument whom God wishes, unworthy as I am, to use to recall men, my fellow creatures, to their first estate of masonry, which would speak spiritually to man or his soul in order to make him truly see that man is actually divine, having been created in the image and likeness of that almighty being. Martinez de Pasquale, April 13th, 1768. In the face of somewhat scant biographical details, it can be asserted that Don Martinez de Pasquale was born in Grenoble around the year 1710. His father was a native of Alicante, Spain, born there in 1671. At the capital of the French Alps, under the auspices of the bishops and princes of Grenoble, the young Martinez would have been christened and attended celebration of the Mass at the old cathedral of Notre-Dame de Grenoble. He would have received his first schooling there. Martinez de Pasquale was regarded by some of his contemporaries, followers, and sympathizers as being of at least partly Jewish ancestry, possibly from a line of conversos like St. Teresa of Avila, for he was devoutly Catholic throughout his life. However, the assumption of a putative Jewish or Moreno ancestry has sometimes been deemed erroneous. Jean-Baptiste Willemoes denied that Martinez de Pasquale was of Jewish extraction, although, as an initiate of the high secret science of Moses, he held the highest admiration for the virtues of the original Hebrew patriarchs. Franz von Baader summarily concluded that Martinez de Pasquale was a Jew and a Christian at the same time. The honorific title Don indicates a rank of minor nobility, that of écuyer, squire, which he inherited from his father. Perpetuating the romantic mystique of the exiled nobles of the Stuart court active on the continent and the Jacobite Écossais culture which saturated French masonry during that period, Martinez claimed a Masonic status inherited through his father, who had been granted a charter from Charles Stuart himself, dated 20th of May 1738, the status of which was apparently transmissible to his son. The charter read thus: in French, translated to English by Nigel Jackson. The four doors of the temple being opened by the power of the Grand Architect of the Universe and of Charles Stuart, King of Scotland, Ireland, and England, Grand Master of all lodges spread over the face of the earth, the Lodge of Stuart having right of jurisdiction over the French province of A, the 20th May 1738, by virtue of our power and authority, we, Grand Master of Scottish, Irish, and English Masonry, have entrusted our right of power as Grand Master of the Lodge to our respected Master, Don Martinez Pasqualis, aged 67, born in the Spanish city of Alicante, so that he may direct and build in peace on any point of the earth a temple of the Grand Architect. Having thus constituted it to this effect, and constituting it by virtue of our power, good and valid, amen, amen, amen. We, Grand Master of the Lodge of Stuart, order our Deputy Grand Master to direct our labors and those of his eldest son, the powerful Master Joachim Don Martins de Pasqualis, aged 28, born in the French city of Grenoble, and this same patent and constitution will he remit to him in the usual way before his death or at his pleasure, so that he may in turn enjoy and exercise his rights and powers, having made public this constitution and patent of Grand Master of the Lodge of Stuart this 20th of May in the Grand Lodge of the East and in 1738. Therefore, it seems reasonable to place the Masonic patrimony of Martinez de Pasquale within the current of Jacobite, Stuart, and Écossais Freemasonry. The 17th century Stuart court in Scotland had been a propitious milieu for a rich esoteric intellectual culture of hermetic masks and chivalric court ceremonials, a patronage of Kabbalistic mysticism, Jewish learning, Pythagorean geometry, sacred architecture, and the arcana of the art of memory. This aristocratic atmosphere was transplanted into the continental lodges of the Jacobite nobles in France, enriching Freemasonry with an elaborate symbolic sensibility which informed the ritual theatres of the haut grades, the Écossais degrees. René Guénon opined that this great flowering of Masonic higher degrees in the 18th century under the banner of Écossaisme was a movement dedicated to preserving the Catholic Christian basis of traditional Freemasonry, whilst more paranoid theorists regarded it as a subversive network of pro-Stuart conspiracists and agents of the Jacobite cause. The driving impulse behind this Franco-Scottish Freemasonry, with its more esoteric and illuminist slant, was the view that Prince Charles Edward Stuart was hereditary Grand Master of Freemasonry, and that the Stuart court in exile at Saint-Germain-en-Laye, with its Masonic lodge, was the center of the Écossais current. Bear in mind, Martinez de Pasquale regarded the vraie maçonnerie of the Order of the Eleuchoan as having been formally authorized by the Lodge of Stuart and its Grand Master, Prince Charles Edward Stuart, and his patent was more or less validated and accepted as authentic by the lodges of his day. Masonic author John Yarker affirms that Martinez Pasquale was making proselytes between 1754 and 1762 under a Jacobite authority of 20th of May 1738, which describes Charles Stuart as King of Scotland, Ireland, and England, and Grand Master of all lodges on the face of the earth. The names of the co-signatories of Martinez's Stuart Masonic patent provide a field for historical research to confirm whether the names of G.M. Thomas Combs, Rowland, Kingson, the orator Raleighan, and the G.M. Killington, who ratified the document on the 29th of June 1738, can be traced among Jacobite circles close to Charles Edward Stuart in the late 1730s. Armed with this warrant, Martinez de Pasquale was empowered to travel on his spiritual mission through the provinces and towns of France, and was granted entry into lodges as an inspector general. Extant military records indicate that Martinez was enrolled in the army as a 9-year-old boy, which was not unusual at that time. According to one account by his disciple, Jean-Baptiste Willemoes, the youthful Martinez de Pasquale entered into service in the Walloon Guards, an infantry corps of the Spanish army. Not long after his enlistment, young Pasquale had a quarrel that resulted in a duel in which his opponent was killed. Consequently, he was obliged to flee. According to Willemoes, before de Pasquale escaped the scene, his father consecrated him as his successor, suggesting an esoteric hereditary transmission, and just prior to his death, Martinez's father summoned his son back and gave him the final ordinations, Willemoes says. On the basis of the Masonic patent or hieroglyphical charter described previously, Martinez became active in the Masonic field of the day, his career commencing at Avignon in 1754 and moving to Marseille and Montpellier, where he established a chapter called the Sovereign Juge Écossais, or the Sovereign Judges, Scottish Judges. We next find him in Toulouse in 1760, where he proposes his plan for the foundation of a lodge and temple which he termed Chevalier Levites de Coenim Leveim et de Elucoam, which involved him in two operations or demonstrations of theurgic rituals. Apparently, events did not work in his favor, though, and he departed from the Freemasons of Toulouse without having successfully convinced them of his claims. Martinez pursued a military career as an army officer, having served in Spain in 1737 in the regiment of Edinburgh Dragoons under the command of his uncle, Dom Pasquale, who was stationed in Corsica and garrisoned for a while at Bastia and in Italy in the service of the Spanish king. In the regiment at Foix, we find Martinez active in the Masonic Lodge of Josué. Important initiates of this regimental lodge are his fellow officers and disciples, de Granville and Champollion, later very ardent Élucoans. This regimental lodge at Foix provides the ground for the formation of his temple Élucoan, also called the Ordre de Élucoan de Josué. Martinez settled in Bordeaux in 1762. There, in September 1767, he married Marguerite Angélique de la Colas de Saint-Michel, the niece of his former commander, the retired major of the regiment of Foix. At Bordeaux, Martinez de Pasquale begins to effectively propagate the Order de Élucoan, having formally convened the Sovereign Tribunal of the Right in Paris as its Grand Sovereign, and in 1765, he encountered another young officer of the regiment of Foix, garrisoned in Bordeaux, namely Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin, later known to achieve fame as the Unknown Philosopher, who had become an enthusiastic initiate of the Élucoan and served as personal secretary to Martinez and as his collaborator in the works of the order. The right of the Élucoan attracted other prominent members, such as Baron de la Chevalerie, Fougueur de Ignacourt, Comte de Lusignan, and Jean-Baptiste Willemoes of Lyon. It became formalized and accepted by the French Grand Lodge. Its activities prospered with active centers founded in Paris, Versailles, Lyon, Strasbourg, Metz, and Grenoble. Amongst the initiates were such figures as the antiquarian scholar Antoine Cour de Gebelin, author of Le Monde Primitif, theorist of the esoteric symbolism of the Tarot, who belonged to the Lyon Temple. Another celebrated initiate inducted into the order by the Comte de Hauteverrières was the writer of supernatural fantasies, the mystical monarchist Jacques Cazot, author of the brilliant and droll occult romance Le Diable Amoureux, which appeared in 1772. It is notable that Jacques Cazot's final words before his execution in 1792 by the agents of the Revolution were, "I die as I have lived, faithful to God and to my king," echoing the motto upon the official seal of the Élucoan, Deo et Regi Fideles. In Paris in 1768, Martinez conferred the first ordination to the highest degree of his regime, the grade of Rue Croix. Interestingly, in the light of de Pasquale's claim to have received the transmission and doctrine of the Élucoan from his father and those he termed his predecessors, he conferred upon his infant son, following his baptism in June 1768, the first consecration into the hierarchy of the order. According to reports, he spent 3 hours in seclusion with the child engaged in this initiatory operation. A.E. Waite describes Martinez as a mysterious magnetic personality whose charisma and sincerity seem to have exerted a tremendous influence upon many of those who encountered him. Willemoes lauds the inner fervency which allowed Martinez to overcome obstacles. But the real key to the success of his paramasonic regime of the Aluk Goan in the second half of the 18th century seems to have been the distinctive and lofty spiritual tenor of its initiatory workings, a profound Judeo-Catholic theosophia which provided a key to the real secrets of the craft, a complex and impressive ceremonial methodology which offered a praxis and pathway to spiritual realization to the aspirant, whom Martinez characterized as the man of desire, or l'homme de désir. The fervent and sincere desire for God being the first qualification the order required of its postulants. As A.E. Waite has remarked, the working of the order of the Aluk Goan was Christian and presupposed throughout the efficacy of religious formulae consecrated from time immemorial by the usage of the Latin Church. The approach of the Aluk Goan was especially characterized by an intensive daily cycle of prayer and invocation, the practice of what we shall term paracletic theurgy, and a profoundly Catholic Christophany focused upon Jesus as the universal divine repairer. In this view, Christ is the mediator through whom man and the fallen universe, for man the microcosm and the macrocosm are one, are restored to their original perfection, as taught in the doctrine of the apokatastasis, the ultimate universal restitution taught by Origen of Alexandria and Gregory of Nyssa in the early church, which held that all beings, even the apostate angels and their chief, the prince of darkness, would finally be redeemed and reabsorbed into the divine unity. As Martinez de Pasquale averred in a letter dated on the 16th of November 1771, "The science which I profess is certain and true, since it comes not from man. Christ himself has said, whatsoever you shall ask in my name, without hesitancy and without doubt in your faith, you shall receive." Observe the true key of science. Thus, as Sayyid Hussein Nasir has written, as a Christian and Freemason, Martinez was part of a luminous theosophical movement running counter to the prevailing currents of Enlightenment atheism, skepticism, and irreligion. He writes, "In France itself, which was the citadel of the new rationalism associated with Descartes and Wolff, the 18th century was witness to Martinez de Pasquale, reviver of certain of the traditional sciences." Now, at first, Martinez worked within the Masonic lodges of France, which he attempted to orient to his regime, doctrine, and modus operandi of the vraie maçonnerie. Controversially disparaging mainstream Freemasonry as Jebusian or apocryphal in comparison with the spiritual masonry of the Aluk Goan. And for a period, his rite was legitimized as a high-grade system in the French lodges under the Grand Lodge. The substantial differences between the rite of Martinez de Pasquale and ordinary masonry led to increasing problems and objections, however. Eventually, his warrant of official recognition was annulled, and Martinez was decried as a sectarian. Thereafter, the Aluk Goan operated independently under the authority of its tribunal sovereign. The mysterious question of the origin of the theosophic doctrine and esoteric filiation represented by the Aluk Goan has inspired a number of scholars. Martinez himself claimed to have voyaged to China, and in a fabulous vein of Gothic romanticism and the fantastic atmosphere of the Contes Orientales, to have received secret wisdom in the remote climes of far Cathay. In fact, this journey to the Orient has a mystical significance, as the French word for Chinese is an anagram of Noahite, and Martinez taught that the sage descendants of Noah preserved their traditions in China. We might also remember Sufi teachings such as the hadith of the Prophet exhorting the soul to seek knowledge even unto China. As Henry Corbin notes, in Islamic esoteric tradition, the term China denotes the mystical realm of gnosis which lies beyond profane perception. In regard to the travels undertaken in his early years, it is possible that Martinez de Pasquale may have actually encountered Chinese colonies and Taoist esotericists in Timor or the Spanish colony of the Philippines. There is also a theory advanced by de Pasquale's biographer, Michel Nahon, that during his military service in Bastia, in Corsica, Martinez may have come into contact with some form of local folk shamanic practice assimilated within Catholicism and akin perhaps to the Mazari or dream hunters, and then synthesized some elements of his tradition. This is adduced by certain curious elements in his theurgical practices, which we will examine later, and the marked emphasis upon spiritual healing and therapeutic operations in a virtually shamanic vein, nonetheless maintaining the strongly Christian complexion of the order. All we can surmise for certain, though, is that Martinez de Pasquale traveled widely as a young man in his quest for wisdom. He no doubt assimilated and synthesized esoteric knowledge wherever he encountered it. Drawing upon contemporary records, Martinez de Pasquale appears to us wrapped in a mysterious glamour, the aureole of the 18th century romantic efflorescence, glimpsed upon the European stage in various guises, by turns aristocratic military officer in Spain, Corsica, Italy, and France, magnificently robed Masonic hierophant of the haute grades entering into the candlelight of the lodge with sword in hand, theurgist adept of the temples, mystical adventurer and noble traveller in quest of arcane wisdom in the distant East, and husband and father at his domicile in Bordeaux. Some of his companions mentioned that in character Martinez was sometimes inconsistent and credulous, trusting individuals who did not merit confidence, sometimes carried away by the ardour of his spiritual aspirations for the order. His finances were often uncertain, leading him into debt. Nonetheless, it was agreed that he was a man motivated by the highest aims who adhered to the superior ethical standard he set for his order. All these glimpses of the man, who in his certificate of Catholicity is described at the age of 45 as being of medium height, with black hair, wearing a peruque, the customary wig worn by 18th century gentlemen, cast various lights upon the Sovereign Master's personality and career. Another significant hint can be deduced from certain remarks by Prince Christian of Hesse-Darmstadt, who said in a letter that Pasquale claimed that this knowledge came from the East, but it is to presume that he had received it from Africa. In his essay, The Enigma of Martinez de Pasquale, the esotericist and metaphysician René Guénon surmised that this quote indicated that the Cohen initiatory transmission might be traced to Sephardic Jewish sources in North Africa. The expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492 led to migration of Sephardic Jews to the Maghreb. Some 20,000 Jews settled in Morocco, and here, from the 15th century, we might find some clue as to the origin of Martinez de Pasquale's markedly Judeo-Christian teachings. One possibility is that a transmission from some Sephardic mystical circle operating in the Maghreb during the 16th and 17th centuries was grafted onto or transplanted within the early phenomenon of Catholic Jacobite Écossais Freemasonry promoted by the Stuart court in exile, and that this praxis was authorized and or realized within the Pasquale family. There are certain hints in surviving sources that indicate there may have been some contact between Martinez de Pasquale and Rabbi Dr. Chaim Samuel Yaakov Falk, the famed Kabbalist known as the Baal Shem of London. Moreover, Martinez was clearly familiar with various texts, including Cornelius Agrippa von Nettesheim's encyclopedic three-volume treatise De Occulta Philosophia, Pietro de Urbino's Heptameron, and the monumental 16th-century translation of the Corpus Hermeticum into French with commentaries by François de Foix, entitled The Christian Trismegistus. But for Martinez, the really essential book and central study of the Homme de Désir was always the Bible. It has been said that the veritable Iluk Goan, faithful to the orthodoxy of Judeo-Christian tradition, remains forever a man of the Bible. At no point did Martinez claim the status of an innovator, nor did he claim to have elaborated the Cohen theosophy himself. He only asserted that his role was under the warrants of a certain authority, to have received, adapted, and disseminated the mystagogy, doctrine, and methods within the Masonic culture of his day. As he stated, "I have never sought to lead anyone into error or otherwise deceive those who have come to me in good faith, that they might share in certain knowledge which has been handed down to me by my predecessors." Regarding Martinus, A.E. Waite observed cogently that, "If we judge by the literary remains of Pasquale as a reflection of things so received, that which he taught was a hidden meaning and wisdom behind the letter of Christian doctrine. For René Guénon, the ambitious project of Martinus de Pasquale had at its goal the establishment, within interior Freemasonry, of the elder Judaic priesthood." Writing on the 8th of January in 1772, Martinus de Pasquale was very clear about the provenance and purview of the Luke Cohen. "The doctrine of the order is very sublime, and its aim so exalted that we cannot doubt that it has subsisted from all times, that it subsists and will subsist eternally, either in this temporal passive life or in the spiritual impassive life. In truth, the order of Martinus de Pasquale traced its origins to a suprahuman and suprahistorical source. As A.E. Waite said, as regards the origin of the order, it derived from the Creator himself and had been perpetuated from the days of Adam, that is to say, from Adam to Noah, from Noah to Melchizedek, and afterwards to Abraham, Moses, Solomon, Zerubbabel, and Christ. The meaning is that there has always been a secret tradition in the world, and its successive epochs are marked by successive custodians. It is in this sense, also, that the purpose of the order is said to be the maintenance of man in his primeval virtue, his spiritual and divine powers." The hidden initiatic hierarchy ruling over the order of the Luke Cohen throughout the ages was composed of seven grand sovereigns, seven masters presiding over the four universal regions. Martinus de Pasquale was the grand sovereign appointed for the septentrional region, and is the only one whose identity we know. These seven grand sovereigns of the Luke Cohen, mysterious masters who in their occultation constitute the esoteric magisterium of the order, perhaps mirror the archetypal constellation or configuration which Islamic Sufism terms the seven Aqtab or poles, the seven rishis of Vedic tradition, and the seven sages, Abkulu, of Mesopotamian Babylonian lore, all of whom are seen as corresponding to the seven stars of Ursa Major revolving around the pole star. The invisible influence of these seven grand sovereigns of the order, veritable superiores incogniti, governs and directs the eternal chevalere of the Luke Cohen through time and space, from the beginning of the universe to the last hour of the great reintegration. In this light, the Abbé Fournier lauded Martinus de Pasquale as an incarnate embodiment of one of the seven spirits who shine before the divine throne. In regard to the broader symbolism of the Luke Cohen, or elect degrees in traditional Freemasonry, which are usually designated as grades of vengeance, and pertain to the judgment meted out to the three slayers of the architect of the Solomonic Temple, Hiram, the dagger or poignard recurs as the emblematic motif, such as in Maître Élu des Neufs, the Élu de Londres, Élu de Queens, Élu Secret, Sublime Chevalier Élu, Élu de Perignan, and Grand Élu Ancien, the 14th degree in the 25 degrees of the Rite of Perfection, all of which are unrelated to the order of the Élu Cohen. But where the apocryphal rites of Freemasonry had constituted their grades of vengeance to commemorate the justice accorded to the murderers of Hiram, and by extension of Jesus Christ, foreshadowed by the fratricide of Abel by Cain, Martinus de Pasquale transposed and revalorized the symbolism to denote the redress for the crime of the first fallen and prevaricating spirits who brought about the downfall and spiritual death of the original Homme Dieu. The remit of the order is to exact justice upon the perpetrators, to avenge this first crime against the spiritual man, and in so doing, restore him to his first primeval estate of virtue, knowledge, and power. In the original seal of the order from 1767, two poignards are depicted, their points turned toward the lunar crescent. They represent the royal power and spiritual authority of the king and the pontiff, in the esoteric sense, the original prerogatives of Adam, the Chom Ryu, the king and priest of the universe. Their appearance in the seal also refers to a mysterious theurgical ceremony of the poignards observed within temples of the Alu Kohen. De Pasquale defined the nature and mission of the spiritual knighthood of the order when he exhorted the brothers in 1766. Let us, against our enemies, have no other weapons than the word of truth, than the square and the compass. There are no weapons in the world stronger than these. The rite of the Alu Kohen, now officially regularized within the regime of the Grand Lodge of France, prospered. With the help of his secretary, Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin, the Grand Sovereign undertook the composition of a curious text in which he would expound the inner doctrine of the order, an exposition which had been termed an 18th-century Midrash, a commentary upon the Bible, to instruct the members of the highest degrees of the Alu Kohen, the Rokwa, in the esoteric doctrine. This strange work, reserved for the secret class of the order, written in an odd and somewhat difficult style of French, was entitled The Treatise of the Reintegration of Beings into Their First Divine and Spiritual Properties, Virtues, and Powers. Traité de la réintégration des êtres dans leur première propriétés, vertus et puissance spirituelle et divine. Forgive my French accent. However, this work was never completed as circumstances in Martinus's life conspired to interrupt his composition. What we possess is essentially an unfinished manuscript, nonetheless invaluable in our studies of the authentic doctrine of Martinisme. It describes the great spiritual drama of the revolt and prevarication of the fallen angels during the war in heaven, and of the emanation of man, his consequent fall and ultimate destiny. Expounding the pathway of reconciliation with the eternal and the final reintegration into the divine unity, it interprets many episodes from the prophetic cycles of the Old Testament and the Gospel, subjecting both to a highly original exegesis, which reveals their inner esoteric meaning to the man of desire. The treatise is a major resource concerning the esoteric ontology, anthropology, theosophy, pneumatology, arithmosophy, and sacred geometry of the Rokwa. Temporal business, consisting a worldly dispute over inheritance, drew Martinus away from the lodges and temples at Bordeaux and delayed his work on the Traité. It also seems that by 1769, Martinus was in considerable economic travail, owing debts to the sum of 1,200 livres. Furthermore, in 1772, he became embroiled in a curious case in which he was formally named in the denunciation of a certain Marquis de Labeum and his wife, who were consequently arrested at Bordeaux under accusations of defrauding individuals by their activities, involving the evocation of spirit guardians of buried treasure, alchemical transmutation of metals, and the practice of the Masonry of Solomon. At their arrest, various Masonic jewels, black, red, and blue cordons, and ceremonial aprons were taken from the house of La Bohème and his wife. This strange condemnation had not been legally resolved. It led ultimately to their banishment from the Kingdom of France, when Martinus de Pasquale boarded ship and left France. It has been surmised that Martinus's quarrel with the La Bohèmes may have been due to rival Masonic claims and may have played some part in precipitating his departure to the West Indies. Bordeaux was an important port for the sugar trade with the French colonies in the West Indies. With mounting financial difficulties and a legal claim to an estate, possibly a sugar plantation on Saint-Domingue, present-day Haiti, Martinus embarked as passenger aboard the Duc de Duras, bound for Ligonier, 5th of May, 1772, with the intention of recovering certain properties on the island. Saint-Domingue was the wealthiest colony, the so-called Pearl of the Antilles. Its output of sugar, coffee, and cocoa yielded a source of vast revenues for France. As a Frenchman, Martinez de Pasquale would have enjoyed a privileged position on the island, which economy was sustained mercilessly through forced labor and black African slaves working the sugar, tobacco, indigo, and cotton plantations. Among these French colonists, there was also an active Masonic milieu. It is thought that one of every three Frenchmen on the island at that time was a Freemason. Freemasonry had been established in Saint-Domingue in 1749 with the founding of two lodges authorized from France. Curiously, there is some documentary evidence that a center of the Ilocoan was active prior to Martinez de Pasquale's arrival upon the island. The collection of various haute-grade rituals, including Cohen texts and catechisms, called the Manuscrit Bailo, is dated thus: à l'Orient du Port-au-Prince, le 9 May 1768, Martinez de Pasquale was still residing in Bordeaux at this date. The Manuscrit Bailo contains the Griffe Magique of Martinez in the dedication. In the name of the Grand Architect of the Universe, of the Orient of Orients, of the Chevalier Ilocoan of the Universe. The provenance of this manuscript, documenting the Order's activities on Saint-Domingue, preceding the Sovereign Master's arrival, seems to lie with the cousin of Martinez de Pasquale, Armand Robert Cagnet de Lestière, General Commissioner of the French Navy at Port-au-Prince. Cagnet de Lestière, who lived at Cap Français, was also the proprietor of a plantation estate at La Coule du Nord and had been very active in the high degrees of Freemasonry on Saint-Domingue, being an initiate of the lodge Le Saint-Esprit at Liargne in 1748. Forgive my French pronunciations. I'm doing my best here, but Liargne in 1748. And holding the office of Deputy Grand Master of the Parfait Lodge d'Écosse de Saint-Marc in 1763. As a relative, fellow officer, and confidant of Martinez de Pasquale, the evidence would indicate that Cagnet de Lestière was authorized to initiate activities of the Ilocoan on Saint-Domingue around 1767 to 1768, preparing the ground for Martinez de Pasquale's appearance at Port-au-Prince in 1772. Moreau de Saint-Méry commented in the 18th century that everything at Saint-Domingue takes on a character of opulence which astonishes the European. Such a byword for wealth and luxury had the island become. This exotic Caribbean microcosm of the Ancien Régime was also a haven for numerous adventurers and fortune seekers of all kinds from the two continents. Whilst an indolent elite of French Creole estate owners presided over vast plantations, the ports and cities were active with merchants, along with those who had lost fortunes and characters in France, bankrupts, fugitive monks, retired officers, priests tired of their profession, and so on. Aboard the Duc de Duras, Martinez would have sailed into the sultry climes of Hispaniola, viewing from the deck the swaying palms, spice and fruit trees, mountains and colonial buildings and mansions of the ship, as the ship drew into harbour at Liargne, its port thronged with the masts of many galleons of the French Navy. Martinez had family contacts on his wife's side on Saint-Domingue, and would have entered into the strange world of mannered 18th century French culture transplanted under the torrid sun of the tropics. As he himself put it in a letter, "In that region of Saint-Domingue, I have been given a gift of a large estate that I take back from the hands of a man who keeps it unjustly." At Port-au-Prince in 1773, Martinez formalized a sovereign tribunal of the Order of Ilocoan, appointing Cagnet de Lestière to be his substitute as Grand Master. During 1773, the right of the Ilocoan seems to have thrived in Saint-Domingue, and Martinez maintained communication with the temples and lodges in France, issuing ritual instructions, statutes, finalizing grade ceremonies, and issuing ordinances. There is also the question of Martinus's wider influence within the Masonic lodges of Saint-Domingue in the 18th century. It was Martinus's contemporary, another Frenchman from Bordeaux, Étienne Morin, 1717 to 1771, who took the 25 Écossais degrees of the Rite of Perfection, or Rite of the Royal Secret, formalized within the regime of the Council of Emperors of the Orient and the Occident, from Saint-Domingue to Charleston, a transmission crucial to the establishment of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite in the United States, and, ultimately, worldwide. The island was clearly a significant center of high-grade Freemasonry in the 18th century, and the activities of Martinus de Pasquale at this period should be evaluated against this historical backdrop. The Saint-Domingue temples of the Eleuchoan might conceivably have exerted a certain influence within Masonic ferments of this important period of the 1770s. The Haitian writer Milo Rigaud, in his book Veve, Diagramme Rituel de Voodoo, stated that Martinus de Pasquale undertook his voyage to Saint-Domingue in order to study Houdan, an unlikely proposition, which has given rise to somewhat fantastic legends in certain quarters involving an illegitimate son, an Afranchi or freeman, who propagated a localized and syncretic form of the Cohen patrimony. However, despite the undoubted influence of Freemasonry upon Haitian folk culture, no real data emerges to confirm these hypotheses. Even if, like his contemporary, the 18th century French writer Moreau de Saint-Marie, Martinez was aware of voodoo practices on Saint-Domingue, the tenor of Martinez's doctrines and his professed hostility to sorcery, pythonesses, and idolatry make it unlikely that he would have looked upon such phenomena favorably. Martinus was working indefatigably to promote the Eleuchoan during 1774. At this point, he authorized the ritual admission of women to the order with a special ceremonial initiation, a clear sign of the mission of the Martiniste school as a paramasonic association. However, the Trois Poissons Maîtres fell sick with a debilitating illness which failed to abate. His last letter, written while racked with fever and beset with painful abscesses, expressed bitter indignation at the news that certain Rocroix of the order were becoming too involved with the German Masonic Templar regime of the strict observance. As Martinus lay on his deathbed, 2,000 leagues away in Bordeaux, his wife, Marguerite Angélique de Pasquale, was sat in her chamber, working quietly on a piece of embroidery at the hour of sunset when she received a strange portent of his demise. She witnessed her husband's form cross the chamber diagonally, whereupon she cried out, "Ah, mon Dieu, my husband is dead!" This was the moment when the dying Martinus de Pasquale in Saint-Domingue saluted his wife and passed from this temporal world to the Orient of Orients, Tuesday, the 17th of September, 1774. The mortal remains of the master were interred with the ceremonial prayers of the order in a now unknown sepulchre on Saint-Domingue. Before his death, Martinus had appointed Armand Robert Cagnet de Liestier as his successor, but the latter himself died in 1778. His successor, Sébastien de Las Casas, returned to France to head the order in 1780, but very rapidly we see the rite of Eleuchoan fall into fragmentation and decline, its temples dispersing, having lost the momentum that they had enjoyed under Martinus de Pasquale's guidance. The distractions of Franz Anton Mesmer's demonstrations of animal magnetism led some of the initiates down a questionable route of somnambulistic trances and psychism, and to all appearances, the spiritual mission of the Eleuchoan seemed to be falling into disarray and disintegration. The articles of the Moribund Order were transferred to the keeping of the Masonic Rite of the Philalethes, founded by Savalette de Longue in 1773, as a kind of hermetic research lodge, an alchemical illuminist rite of 12 degrees, whose ninth degree was called Philosophe Inconnu. The implanting of the Eleuchoan's legacy into the Philalethes and the rite primitif de Narbonne resulted in the late diffusion of what might be termed primitive Martinism. Curiously, in a letter to the Marquis de Chefdebien, head of the Rite Primitif de Narbonne, written in 1807, the erstwhile substitute universal of the Order of the Leucoan, Bacon de la Chevalerie, spoke cryptically of there still being alive at that date the mysterious sovereign master under whose direction the Coen order is always governed. Following this disaggregation, the order of Leucoan faded from view by gradual degrees. The last known initiate of the original order, d'Estigny, who had been a member of the Coen temple at Port-au-Prince, died in 1868. But the original impulse of the theosophic doctrines, spiritual masonry, and divine cultus of paracletic theurgy, expounded by Martinez de Pasquale, would nonetheless continue to reverberate and ignite inspiration into our own era. Well, thank you for listening this far. If you liked this story and would like to see it in print, you can always subscribe to The Esoteric Mason. Have a few copies of the first issue left. Not many. EsotericMason.com. You can subscribe there. Also, consider becoming a patron and support the show. Head over to RockyMountainMason.com, click the link to support the show, become a patron. And until next time, take care and Godspeed.